You are listening to a free podcast of The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. To support the show and receive nearly an hour extra material daily, become a member today at majority.fm. Resistance is futile.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar, where every day is casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday. Tuesday, casual Tuesday. Wednesday, casual hump day. Thursday, casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
It is Friday, September 15th, 2011. My name's Sam Cedar. This is The Majority Report. We are broadcasting live. The literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. Casual Friday, folks. Give me a break. I'm wearing a collar shirt. I showered today. I'm even shaving. God, I have no integrity. Today on the program, it's Friday. Cliff Schechter, never casual. We'll also have Chris Rosen. Sorry about that. Just haven't gotten around to figuring out what to do with him. Also on the program today, that Monsanto story I've been promising. Some interesting stories about healthcare and some blockbuster, I guess, claims by Ron Suskin in his book that is coming out later next week. As to what's been going on in the Obama administration. But before we go any further, ladies and gentlemen, it is, as always, my pleasure to welcome to the program Mr. Cliff Schechter. Oh, wait a second. Hold on. That's not legitimate. Let me do this properly. Ladies and gentlemen, this is the Cliff Schechter theme song.
Cliff Schechter, Libertas LLC, New Media, Public Relations, and Strategy. If you want any of these services, you know who you gotta see. Cliff Schechter, Libertas LLC.com.
That really is a pretty song, isn't it, Cliff?
It is. It's very nice, and especially on a casual Friday, it makes me feel nice. You know, just feel good about life in general.
I'm glad to hear that. Yes, we need more and more of that. What's that?
Well, I have to at least sound nice before I start reaming on, inevitably reaming on certain people we're going to talk about. So I don't want people to think I'm just all fire and brimstone.
Right. There's a soft side to Cliff Schechter. I wasn't going to start there, but maybe we should. I don't know if you saw earlier in the week this story about fatherhood leading to a drop in testosterone. Now, an emailer claims that it comes back after the first year. I have not experienced that at all, the returning of the testosterone. But apparently it's men, when they spend a lot of time, you know, helping out with their kids, their testosterone levels drop. Have you, I don't want you to get too personal, Cliff, but yeah.
Well, I was going to start talking and I started to tear up a bit. let me start with the beauty of birth when the first one, it's tough with me because in all honesty, I was a wimp beforehand.
Right.
So
I understand that dilemma.
When you're pretty much a weakling, like I am, it's kind of hard to trace. You know, did you become any more wimpy after the kids came along, or you know, is it just your kind of overall wimpy self? So I don't know. I'm not sure.
I guess it's tough in certain circumstances to measure. You know, once you get down below a certain level, I don't know if it really makes a difference at that point.
That's what I'm saying, right? Yeah. I mean, if you fail a test, you fail a test. It doesn't really matter if you get like a 20 or a 55.
Right,
you know
I mean? See. Yes, no, definitely. Well, I have to say that you certainly seem to save up your testosterone for Fridays because you come off as
Thank
extremely
you.
Manly on this program. And I just wanted to tell you that.
I need some place to do that. So I appreciate your providing me that forum.
Right. We will take the clippings of you on this program. We will somehow figure out to place them in amber. So that you can show your children at one point that, like, look, Daddy was manly at certain times.
At some point, I can become a theme park like Jurassic Park.
There you go.
cool.
All right, well, let's get into this because this Susskind thing, you know, Ron Susskind is has a, I think, a very good reputation. I mean, he I've had the chance to interview him multiple times over the years. And his stuff, you know, he's come out with a lot. The 1% doctrine, of course, the price of loyalty, books about.
And the price of loyalty, man, that had some pretty serious stuff. I mean, there are things, you know, that have almost become like, I mean, they've entered our political culture. You know, the Dick Cheney saying Reagan taught us that deficits don't matter anymore. Mm-hmm. I know I've quoted that line before. The big one I think a lot of people have been quoting forever, which is, you know, that we create our own reality.
Right.
You know, and while you're, I think that was from that book. I know it was from Susskind.
That was actually from the 1% doctrine. I mean, the interesting thing, that has always resonated with me because we had him on the original Majority Report in, must have been, gosh, sometime in the summer of 2004, and in his research for 1% doctrine, he told us that quote. And of course, Air America had their stuff together so much that we were able to get that. We were never able to sort of pass that around. And of course, once it came out in that book, I think is when it really, really became the meme that it became, the reality based community. And you're right. And there, I've never really seen any refutation of his reporting. Legitimate refutation. And so the stories that are going to come out in this book are supposedly, I mean, you know, nobody I know has the book yet, which is sort of rare for these things. But
they didn't send you an early copy, Sam?
Well, they generally do. But now I only will read them if they are digital. And so I refuse.
It's a hugely popular Majority Report. Keith Olbermann every time. You know, he needs a night off, is calling you in. I mean, what does a guy need to do to be sent early copies of
well,
a book?
Well, to be fair, as far as I know, no one has gotten it. So I'm not taking it too personally. And, of course, I have such little testosterone. What am I going to do about it anyways?
That's a good point. Well, don't ask me, but maybe one of the guys there can help you out.
Right. Maybe we can get one of the guys in the office to get upset about this. But so let's talk about this. The big... the headline that's come from this, the New York Times apparently acquired a pre-release copy of the book, was that President Obama had instructed Treasury Secretary Tim Geithner back in March of 2009 to consider dissolving Citigroup. During the course of the stress test on the banks, and of course the idea was come up with a plan on how you would do this, start to move the ball forward, because there was obviously, I mean, President Obama's not doing this if it wasn't clear at the time that Citigroup was sucking a huge amount of money out of the U.S. government or the Fed, anyways. To maintain its solvency, right? I mean, he doesn't just out of the blue go like, come up with something for how he would dissolve Citigroup. And apparently, Geithner, according to internal memos, slow-walked it and more or less ignored the order.
Yeah, you know, this sort of, in a way, I think this ends up what's the right word? I mean, fortifying, I don't know if that's the right word, but backing up kind of what some of the things you and I have talked about in this show. I've always felt like, look, there's two. There seem to be, first of all, there's the people that defend Obama to the death, and to me, if you defend everything somebody does, it's kind of like if all you do is insult everything somebody does, then to me, you're not of the reality-based community, to use a term we like, because you're attached to the personality. So I don't pay attention to the people that either defend or, you know, he could do nothing good or nothing bad. Overall, I've come to a negative conclusion about Obama, as I believe you have, and that's based upon analyzing each piece of evidence and what he's done. So I think that you know, that's the most important thing. And in the end, what this has led me to believe is kind of my interpretation, which I think is yours, but you can correct me if I'm wrong, is correct, which is everybody has tried to make it that it either has to be who's criticized him, that it either has to be that he's a very weak leader, or that his agenda is one where he's actually a strong leader who's doing exactly what he wants. And my interpretation has always been the two aren't, you know, if you put it in those terms, they're mutually exclusive, but I don't think they are mutually exclusive. Right. I've always found it to be a combination of things. In some ways, he came in as someone, not the guy he represented himself to be. And he gave hints of that, I think, during the campaign, but didn't come out fully and say it. In other words, he wanted that grand bargain. He wants to, in his words, quote unquote, reform Social Security and Medicare. All right. That's something he wanted to do. But, you know, he wants to make deficits a priority. I believe that too. But at the same time, I do believe there are some more progressive things he wanted. You know, for example, he did want to get rid of the Bush tax cuts, and just caved on that. You know, I could probably bring up another half dozen examples of things where I think he has more progressive inclinations, but has decided to go with, you know, because he doesn't have the experience and strength to stand up. So I think it's always been a combination of those two things. And what's disturbing about this is, you know, I think, for the people that thought that he's just trying to undermine us and he's always not been an anti-progressive hiding in progressive clothing, this sort of shows that the large degree it is, the inexperience and the fact that he's not really in control of things, which I think is rather disturbing.
It is disturbing. I mean, it's interesting because, you know, the fallout from this can go one of two ways, and it really is going to be how Obama and his administration reacts. Yesterday, I think it was, or the day before, James Carville was writing, like, what you need to do is fire, indict, and fight. And I think that, you know, the narrative that can come out of this is one that could sort of benefit Obama in the sense that, you know, we need to rally around the president so he has the strength to overcome these sort of institutional and structural issues. Or it could be that he's weak. And this is problematic because there's certainly an attempt by the right now to push this narrative and attack him personally, because the one thing that stands between President Perry or President Romney and President Obama, I guess, is that his approval ratings personally are still quite high. And so there's an attempt to attack him on a personal level. You start to hear the Republicans say, like, he's a perfectly nice guy. He just doesn't know what he's doing. And to a certain extent, you know, a story like this gets framed in that way. The real question is this an opening? And in fact, maybe not even an opening, but does it almost compel him to fire Geithner? Not because of this, because he clearly, according to the story about the book, anyways, or what the book says, he was aware of this going on, and I think the quote is, "Agitated may be too strong a word." Susskind quotes Obama as saying, when Obama found out that Geithner hadn't followed his prescription, and clearly Geithner has become the guy since that time, but. It would send a message if he fired Geithner, not so much in addressing this, but in addressing Geithner's failure as in the policies that he's pursued.
Right. I mean, in a way, you know, I guess the question we have to ask is, you know, does he have it in him? because there have been other sort of times like this where I felt like, and I think we've discussed, you know, whether firing someone or making a bold policy choice, you know, if he'd stood up on, you know, for, you know, on the debt ceiling fight on the grounds of the 14th Amendment, for example. You know, there's just there have been things he could do that would have been bold moves to be like, you know, to stand up and show strength. And he's just, you know, whereas the Republicans, they're like trying to carve up electoral votes in Pennsylvania to hurt Democrats and do everything, you know, when they get power, to try to weaken the opposition. I mean, you know, when you were on Countdown, you had Ari Berman on, if I remember, about his piece on what they're doing around the country in voting. I've seen it in Ohio. I mean, this is what they do. You know, they don't care if it's legal or not when they're in power. They try to, and we don't, you know, we don't even, we, I guess, many Democrats and certainly the president so far doesn't even use the things that are available to them. You know, and to me, it seems like if you're trying to show that you're a strong leader, and you know, to I would think someone directly disobeying you is pretty much fireable grounds, if that's a word.
Right.
And I mean, now this has come out, I don't get it. I don't, but I mean, then again, he's been defending Geithner since the beginning when it came up the guy didn't pay his taxes on time, you know? And it's sort of like, I mean, Geithner has been literally politically a disaster from the moment he was chosen. You know, a guy that was too good to pay his taxes on time, a guy that was involved in the New York Fed when everything went to hell, and on and on and on, close to Rubin, and now you, of course, see the Citigroup thing. It just seems to me that the optics of it from the beginning were so unbelievably politically stupid that I never understood how he could have possibly been picked to begin with. I didn't understand how Obama could have stood by him when the tax stuff came out and other stuff. So it's sort of like I'm at a loss. I mean, for me to really give the advice, you know, I mean, I respect Carville's advice, but I mean, does anybody really believe he's going to listen to it anymore?
Right. Well,
Look, I hope so. I guess I could still hope against hope, to use a word that's been overused sometimes, that he might do it. But I mean, when you look at past behavior, does anybody have, I don't know, you tell me, Sam, do you have any confidence that he would do something that bold?
No, and I think that's what would make it actually that much better, frankly,
right.
Because he would be beating expectations. But you're right. I mean, and this is, this is a problem. People should understand that, you know, I have made it very clear that faced with the choice of President Romney or Perry or Bachman or any of those morons in nut jobs. I mean, real. These are grade A nut jobs who could do even more damage to the country. I'm going to support President Obama. But, you know, at one point it becomes clear that he's just making it hard to support him. Just, you know, never mind on a policy grounds, on political grounds. I mean, I just saw
this. You can
this.
Still support someone and criticize them, you know.
I mean,
with everything I'm saying right now, my you know, unless something shocking were to happen, I would never say never and never say definitely, but I would see myself voting for him too, most likely. But I mean, yeah, at the same time, it doesn't mean that some people believe that means that we need to keep our mouths shut and just let him do whatever he's going to do. And if doing whatever he's going to do is just going to lead to him getting his butt kicked in the election, then in a way, you know, what's my point for existing? I mean, right. I'm not going to be one of these hacks that just sits there and says everything is wonderful and great, and then he loses.
Right.
I mean, that's what all these guys were saying before 2010 when you and I were saying things weren't wonderful and great, and look what happened in 2010.
You know, there was, I think you probably saw this too, or you might have, there was a report that Obama's fundraising on his big campaign donors, there was apparently there's a fundraising event in New York City that they, you know, big money, like, you know, come spend $70,000 for you and your
38,500. Are you talking about that email?
Yes.
They cut it down to half?
Yes. Tell us about
what a bargain.
Tell us about that. I don't know how widely disseminated this is, but you and I are on secret. We go to secret Bilderberger
double
groups.
Secret probation listservs.
We go
such,
to the Bilderberger group listserv, and the Illuminati gets us a lot.
I
of
only
stuff.
Had to offer up one of my children. Did you have to offer up more to get on that listserv?
No, I tried to offer up my child. They said no. It wouldn't take.
Nicely played, Sam.
Thank you.
Yeah, well, I guess it was 38,500 per individual, you know, and was it come out to about 76,000, 77,000?
Yeah, I think you may have gotten a $77,000
per couple.
Right.
Right, and to be at the sort of private dinner, was it Evercore Partners, one of those kinds of private equity firms, to be able to have a nice audience with the president, you know, the kind of audience that you and I get.
Right. Weekly. No, of course.
But they were doing two for the price of one. Now, for only the low price of $38,500
for a couple,
you get you and your wife,
right,
and your spouse in there.
I mean, that, so, and there are reports that this is happening across the country, you know, in on the East and West Coasts. And so it's not just the dirty, unwashed hippies like ourselves. And it's not just
right.
the professional leftists, because as professional leftists, we don't necessarily have that type of loose change. You would have to bring it down significantly, a 50% reduction on the $38,000 per person. That's just not going to cut it for guys like you and I. So
I would say if they were willing to go down to $38.50, I might be able to do it.
Right, exactly. There would be some negotiation
it still
at my house.
Stretch.
There would be some negotiation at my house, but and I'd probably have to ask for a fundraising call on the show. But I mean, so
I'd have to sell one of my kids Thomas trains, but you know, he's got enough of that crap.
Exactly.
Quite frankly.
But this is a problem, because, you know, one of the things that the Obama campaign, I think, has been planning to do is to simply outspend significantly whoever the Republican challenger is. And if you're already having to do cut rate 14 months out, you know, theoretically before most of these people are already tapped, there's a problem. There's a real problem.
Yeah, it's not a good sign.
And
well, because that's, I mean, and frankly, that was going to be with so many other things going against him, you know, like the economy, obviously, like voting rights being restricted in states where Republicans have completely
right.
taken over, and other things that are going to make it really tough on him. You know, the thing that was going to save him is the $1 billion, you know, I mean, the money to spend on organizing and maybe having enough lawyers to make sure votes are counted and things like that, you know, in addition to obviously all the advertising and all the other good stuff, that may be what is able to kind of rescue him. And I mean, I don't know, there, you know, but if that doesn't happen, there's reason to worry.
And just today, I think it was on the Hill, there was some leading Democrats who got really, really pissed off at the administration. Because they wanted more details on the mortgage relief that Obama brought up in his joint session speech, and they're not getting any answers, and they're getting it basically, you know, what is like sort of, you know, the way these things work, and you know this, is that, you know, the lawmakers, they get snubbed, and what is really sort of like a sort of not quite personal, but a sort of a professional snub unleashes their broader frustrations. And now we have Democrats, you know, sort of, we're seeing more and more of these stories where establishment and institutional Democrats are expressing their frustration. And one thing that I've been saying now for 3, 4, 5 months is, who is going to be, when are we going to start to get an indication as to whether or not Democrats are actually going to, in some ways, not necessarily run against President Obama, but, you know, hint that they're running against him on some level so that they basically protect themselves.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's going to happen in a big way. In terms of the Hill dynamics, it works out much like what you're saying in the campaign, which is, you know, when you're at 80% approval rating, or 60 for that matter, people tend to go with you, which is, and, you know, why you and I have discussed ad nauseum the mistakes made with the stimulus bill and others early on, when his personal approval rating, even in states that generally Democrats don't have enormously high approval ratings, and, you know, that Obama won, the Indianas and North Carolinas and whatever, where he could have gone to a lot of Republican lawmakers instead of just settling for that mm-hmm. for that stimulus bill and pushed it. But if you're not willing to do it then, you know, when your approval rating has gotten to a point where in some polls it's fallen below 40%, no one's scared of you anymore. So the truth is that not only are they not scared of you, but again, they start worrying about their own reelection, particularly Democrats from more conservative districts. I mean, obviously, the blue dogs jump off at the slightest hint of anything anyhow. So now they're going to run away from him. But I think you've got this weird dynamic playing, because there even are people who are more progressive that are scared Obama's going to hurt them in progressive districts because so many people on the left are angry at him.
Right.
So usually it's just the more rightist Democrats running away. But, you know, there have been some signs of people who are more to the kind of even the progressive end of things. They're scared that people have pissed at them, you know, over some of the recent environmental maneuvers, some of the you know, lack of standing up for unions and other things. So, I mean, this could play out. And the people could be running away from them in all directions. And that's not good. And again, I don't hope for any of this stuff. I don't want any of this stuff. You know, I've been pretty clear on the show that I think the way he's handled policy and politics has been a huge, huge disappointment. But again, you know, I'm looking at the other guys too and saying they're crazy. All I can do is tell it like I see it and hope against all hope that he does the right thing. There's plenty of other forums where I spend my time pointing out how absolutely insane I see, you know, the teabag right is. And we do some of that on this show too.
Right.
But I think that's the, you know, I don't know, man.
It's scary.
It's getting strange out there.
It's getting really strange. It's getting super scary, and it's frankly, it's got me worried. And I think one of the things that has become just more and more clear to me over the years is that the people like you and I and the bloggers that we sort of the blogger circles we run in, the one thing that I think people misinterpret, you know, when bloggers on the left criticize President Obama, they're attacked by the establishment and they're attacked by others. And the bottom line is that I don't think people like you and I have a huge ability to change the narrative, but I think what is clear, at the very least, is that we are leading indicators. You know, if you saw, you know, what happened.
I was thinking that exact phrase.
Yeah, what's that?
I said, as you were talking, I was thinking of that exact term.
Yeah,
exactly.
I mean, if you look at, you know, the perfect example to me is Joe Lieberman. You know, there was no way that bloggers were going to unseat Joe Lieberman from the Democratic Party in Connecticut. There's just not enough Connecticut bloggers. And there's just not enough people in Connecticut who are reading, you know, Netroots blogs. But these are the people who are the most sensitive to what's happening on the ground, and they have the way to communicate it. So they're more of a reflection than they are necessarily a change agent. I mean, there are times where I think the Netroots can make a difference, but the clearest function of these people is that they are leading indicators. They give you a sense of what is brewing out there. And so the failure of the Obama administration and, frankly, establishment liberals and Democrats was that instead of looking at the complaints of people like us, they fought them. Instead of seeing them as like, hey, this could be a problem down the road, they thought the answer was to quash
mock
those
and insult.
Exactly.
Right, exactly.
And you can shut us all up, but it won't make a difference because we are not controlling that narrative. We are simply on the leading edge of what's going on the ground. Because the very nature of the things that we do and of the constituencies that we have. And this has been just another lesson in this that I don't think any of them are going to learn. And frankly, I'm not sure they're interested in learning it, because I think there's, you know, there's some cottage industries that these people are involved in, you know, which leads into a whole nother discussion of veal pens and whatnot. But I think that's what's going on.
Yeah. I think so too. There are a lot of people who are invested in not learning this lesson, as you were alluding to there, with that, you know, there's fundraising for certain groups, there's employment post politics for people who are elected as well as appointed, and things of that sort that come into play, sadly. And I won't say that that's everybody, and I'm not trying to cast aspersions on everybody. There may be some people that just simply are wrong. But whatever, you know, again, I don't like to ever say anything's mutually exclusive and there's one vast conspiracy. I often in these things think that there's a lot of different things, different dynamics going on. And I think it's probably a variety of these things all combined. But whatever it is, you know, that's the thing. Is I want them to get it. I want this to come through. You know, and all that, but it just sort of seems like every time, you know, one step forward, two steps backward, you know, I mean, you see, so, you know, a good speech is given or a good policy statement or stands up and says something and then, you know, they do the White House and then I expect, you know, we're only going to accept this job as Bill is one and then within a week, oh yeah, we'll break it into pieces.
Right.
You know, I just don't feel, you know, at this point, I don't put any confidence. I have no confidence in anything they're saying. I don't believe it, which I've found serves me better not to believe it because then I don't get as disappointed.
Yeah, sadly, you know? I feel the same way. And of course, on Monday, we're going to hear what the deficit reduction bill is going to be. And hopefully the Obama administration has gotten the message when it comes to laying off Social Security and Medicare. And I guess we'll have to wait and see. And we will discuss next week.
Yeah, the message of New York 9, which partially was that Anthony Weiner puts his penis out there too much, but partially was, you know, was Obama.
Yeah, well, we shall see. All right, Cliff Schechter, as always, a pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, Sammy. Talk to you soon.
All right, folks, we're going to come back. We're going to be talking to Chris Rosen. I want to remind you, unfortunately, I will not be able to go. I was planning on it, but it's not happening for me. Occupy Wall Street is happening tomorrow. You can head over to adbusters.org to get more information. Apparently on their Facebook page, we'll link all this on our blog. 7,700 people are signed up to attend Occupying Wall Street. I will not be there, but if you can head down there, take some photos, get some decent video, send it to us at majorityreporters@gmail.com, and we will run with that. I will be there in spirit. All right, folks, we're going to take a break. When we come back, Chris Rosen.
Is an idiot.
Here it is, the Republicans' health care plan for America. Don't get sick.
If you think that's a fair ad, okay, then you're a Republican and an asshole. Have at it, Hoss. Be in that party. Despicable, man.
They're the bad guys.
Endless taxpayer bailout.
Yeah, that's not true.
When Obama won, the reason why we worked so hard for him, we didn't want a garden variety politician. Taking a stand, not just cutting deals.
That's what vision is. That's what vision is.
The Best of the Left podcast. The best of the truly liberal media. Edited, organized, and mixed. Only at bestoftheleft.com.
Christopher Rosen of MovieLine.com. Big shot senior editor, eh?
Movie phone.
Here's your theme song.
MoviePhone.com.
In a dimly lit room.
Office.
Watching movies and you dress like a slob.
Don't watch movies.
Jimmy Reefer Cakes got to ask you, said, man, how'd you get that job? I said, how did you get that job?
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, it is now the horizontal editor of moviephone.com. Is that your title now?
Vertical. Close enough, though.
Vertical.
You know,
vertical.
It's a direction.
Longitude.
My favorite. I wanted to say, Jimmy Reefer Cakes, you know, I noticed the song is not different this week. And, you know, Jimmy was kind enough to reply me before the segment started and say, oh, crap, it totally slipped my mind to change the song. Shocking that a man named Jimmy Reefer Cakes is not reliable to do something.
Well, I guess that's true.
Total shock. That was an upset. A total upset.
You know,
if you wouldn't.
Guys
probably fell asleep with his bong.
people in glass houses, actually not even glass houses, because glass actually has some stability, like damp balsam wood houses.
Like the shack that you go in when you're afraid the world is going to end.
Balsam
with your jars.
Balsam,
with
damp
your jars
balsam
of urine.
Wood houses.
Balsam wood. I don't think it's balsam.
But I think balsam wood houses in hurricanes.
I'm not a wood expert, I'm
should,
just saying.
No, well, let's be honest. What, you're not an expert.
Not on wood.
Well, but you're implying that you're an expert on something, and I'm not clear on what that would be.
Sure.
We found out last week, after 9 months, that you're not a movie reviewer.
Well, that's not true. I've been telling you that for a while. I just don't think you heard it.
No. You know, no. It came as a shock.
Let's not bog down, Sam. Let's not bog down on these minor disagreements of title.
I mean, it's Chris. Let me ask you a question. As a latitudinal editor, or whatever it is, a vertical,
yeah,
horizontal, as a geometric editor, what would you do with you? That's what's got to be. That's got to be the Jimmy Reefer Cake song. Has to be a derivation of like, what in the world do we do with a girl like Maria?
Okay.
Honestly, Jesus, Rosen, what did you suggest last week? I didn't watch it.
I had some great. Before we move on, I just wanted to say, after our my great appearance last week, you know, a lot of fans were emailing me, including one named John, who actually works at AOL, and he's a big fan. So I just wanted to give him a shout out. I believe he listens to the podcast later in the week, so he'll hear this and be excited.
How many emails did you get? Because I got to be honest with you, the emails
he's
I've been
getting.
He's
a subscriber, so he's respected. You should respect him.
I want to read to you.
I got tons of emails.
Look, let me. You should forward them to me because the emails I'm getting, buddy, are not necessarily positive. This is from Dietrich. This is from Dietrich, long-time listener, long-time subscriber. Love your show, but I have to ask you to stop referring to the members-only section as the better half. I think you're dissing all the great guests you typically have during the free half of your program, except maybe for Fridays when you have Chris Rosen. Please consider referring to the members-only section as the exclusive half of the program, not the better half. Thank you. Shofar. Now, I mean, do you understand that, like, even in completely unrelated emails, people feel uncomfortable in any way advocating on your behalf? Like, they don't even want to be...
I don't know, Sam. I hear the opposite, and I just don't know. But thanks for listening, whoever wrote that other email. I appreciate the support.
After you said that you don't review movies, there were people who thought this was the longest running joke ever.
Who is this gonna get?
There were people who thought this was the longest running joke ever.
Sam, please refrain from having your piss boy talk to me.
I'll tell you something. Matt happens to do quite a good job with our YouTubes and our Twitters. Our subscriptions are up on YouTube. Our Twitter followers are through the roof. Our donate your account is doing quite well. It would have been as if, like, you know, 9 months into it, Matt comes to me and he goes, I don't know how to use Twitter. Well, wait, what have you been doing
over
there?
I'm not the technical movie reviewer. Anyway,
what does a technical movie reviewer mean?
I'm not technically a movie reviewer. So last week was I recommended a couple of good ones. I don't know if you got to watch them, though.
No.
You didn't. You didn't watch 25th Hour or United 93?
No, I meant to. But I just, like, every time
queue.
I tried to pick the movie out, I was like, Nikki literally goes, like, who told you about this movie? And I was like, Rosen. She says, nope.
Thank you for the support. Appreciate it.
She said, no.
So and, I have a couple
like,
other
now
good
I
ones.
Have to sneak around if I want to watch your movies. You've made my life twice as difficult as it was before. I couldn't go out to see movies, so I started this segment to you to tell me movies I could watch at home, and now I'm not allowed to watch them.
A couple of good ones this week that you'll probably not be able to watch. First one on, I believe, on Amazon is called Half Nelson with Ryan Gosling. I don't know if you've heard of Ryan Gosling. Have you, Sam?
Vaguely.
He's pretty famous now. He's in a bunch of movies out this fall, including one today called Drive. But since you're not going to see that for another year, I thought it would be nice to recommend one of his better, one of his very good roles, Oscar-nominated for Half Nelson. He plays a Brooklyn public school teacher who also happens to be addicted to crack, and it's about how he deals with that addiction and with one of his students as well.
All right. That sounds...
It's a great movie. Very
great,
good.
That's a great movie. You're saying it's a great
it
movie.
Is. I think it's a great movie. Do you like the band Broken Social Scene? Because they do a lot of the music in it also. It takes place in Williamsburg and, like, Brooklyn and stuff. So it's like one of those movies, but it's good.
What does that mean, one of those movies?
Like an indie hipster movie.
Yeah.
I mean, he's got, like, a fucking
beard. Tragically hip movies.
It's not tragically hip. I mean, it's a basically, it's a very old story of, like, a teacher trying to deal with his own demons and, you know, trying to save one of his students from going through the same things, let's say. But
great.
It's good.
I've probably seen it 5,000 times before. It's like the one
where,
like, Mel Gibson in the room with, like, the bad face or whatever it is.
Wow. When's the last movie? Did you stop seeing movies in 1995?
Close.
Was that the end?
Pretty close.
For you?
Pretty close. What's the other movie, Chris?
The other movie is on Netflix. It just got added to Instant Watch, and I feel like because it's on Instant Watch, you should take advantage of it.
Let me ask you a question. It was reported that Netflix has lost, like, a million subscribers. Do you think it was a function of their rate increases or this segment?
Probably the rate increases. I don't think enough Netflix subscribers listen to this show.
Yeah, but by word of mouth, I mean, there could be a multiplier
word of
effect.
Mouth maybe hurt.
A lot
one
of our listeners
noticed,
are people are considered connectors and mavens. So
I will tell you the truth. One thing I've noticed having to do this segment, me and my girlfriend and I use Netflix to watch a lot of TV shows because it's just good for that. But I've noticed having to research, and I put research in air quotes, this segment, Netflix really has a shitty selection at times. There's not a lot of instant watch things that are very new. So that might be why subscribers are lagging also.
You know, when you say I put research in air quotes, I'm going to put your air quotes in air quotes.
So the other one this week was Dazed and Confused, Sam. Have you seen that one?
I've seen that movie a half a dozen times.
So see it another time. It's still great. It's always very watchable. Everyone loves it. And it's available for free now on Instant Watch. So, you know, you don't have to worry about paying for it.
Dazed and Confused, I will recommend to people. If you
oh,
have
really?
Seen...
You'll go that? You'll I'm so glad you'll recommend one of the, you know, seminal movies of the last 20 years.
Well, seminal is a little bit strong, don't you think?
I don't think so. I think that is a very, very strongly beloved movie.
Yeah, but seminal? In what way was it seminal?
Well, I think it was.
Do you know what seminal means?
I don't have my computer in front of me, so no.
Chris Rosen, it's always a pleasure. I will try
and
watch.
I hope you have a great weekend.
Thank you.
And enjoy watching Half Nelson and Dazed and Confused.
Have you seen that new Terrence Malick film?
Yes, Tree of Life, yeah. We talked about this.
Oh, we did? I don't know what has happened to me. Because I said to Nikki, I'm like, we should go see Tree of Life. She's like, I saw it. I told you about that. I was like, what? I don't know what happened to the past, like, 2 months. I think it's Ambien.
But that was good. You might like that one. It was pretty good.
I can't talk to you right now. I have
anyway,
to go.
More next week.
Okay, great. Bye, Chris.
Bye.
You know, I got to say, the upshot is I didn't have to hang up on him this week. I think it's the first time we've ended that segment in literally months where I haven't hung up on him, just out of pure disgust.
That's progress.
Maybe I'm just tired. Maybe I'm just too tired. But now, ladies and gentlemen, oh, we got two great, great songs. Should we start with the World Financial Crisis song, or should we start with the and we got some great sound from Rick Perry and Pat Robertson. Why don't we start with the Rick Perry one since we have that. Also, when we get into the better half of the program, or the exclusive half, I got to do that Monsanto story. I'll do it Monday. Darn it. Darn it. Darn it. Run out of time. I run out of time. It's not enough, folks. It's not enough for you to just be a... If you were all members, then I could get to every story on every show. But you won't be, so I can't. So with that said, let's go to the first offering this week, Reeve for Cakes, Texas Whore.
At least half of all sexually active people will be infected with the virus that causes genital warts. Whether or not the state can mandate a vaccine is an issue to be decided in the highest court. But Rick Perry has the courage in the great state of Texas. Their vaginas can only be the bestest. Nice and slippery, genital wart free. You can check your freedoms at the door and help yourself to a Texas whore.
Wow.
Wow.
It's interesting.
We're lucky this is a podcast, not on radio, for that song.
That's right.
I didn't really follow that one.
Well, it's not about genital warts. We know it's about cervical cancer down the road is really the big issue. In fact, to my knowledge, HPV is undetectable. That's the danger of it. You don't know that you have it, and it is not necessarily a problem for men if they're exposed to it, but for women, they go on for years, not know they have it, and then they get cervical cancer. That's the problem with it. And I don't know if I really see it as an issue of freedom. Do I think that he is a corporate crony? Yes, of course, because if it was anything else, it would be a freedom issue if he didn't have a Merck representative working for him and get that money. But there may be an issue as to its safety, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, you can't send your kid to school if your kid doesn't have certain shots, at least in New York. And But I notice Mrs. Reefercake joined in on that song, so it's nice that the families come back together. It's nice that I can bring them back together. And now, ladies and gentlemen, as you are aware, there is a massive, as effed up as we are here in this country, Europe is in horrible shape. Now, my understanding is this could also be very problematic for us in 2012 because the European banks apparently do not have enough U.S. dollars. And the Fed has now basically opened up their window again to loan them, in some respects, bail out these European banks. Because apparently, my understanding is that U.S. corporations, for the most part, when they get their long-term capital loans, if you're Boeing and you want to build a plane, you got to borrow a ton of money to build this. If you're Caterpillar and you're making new machines or whatnot, you get a long-term loan. Most of these loans, apparently, for long-term capital, actually come from European banks in U.S. dollars, but they don't have many U.S. dollars right now. So that's when we heard last week or the week before that they were going to be selling off a lot of assets. This is the case. It's also another instance in which, for those people who think that the U.S. dollar is going to be abandoned as the world's currency, I think, you know, you should consider this before you make that formulation and worry about it. But be that as it may, I now present to you your EUR, all Greek to me, from the great folks at the Screaming Majority.
We could pass the jobs bill, though it's not likely. We could hold our breath and hope we just get lucky. But no matter what we do or don't do, it's all sucky. Cause it all depends on what happens in the old country. Which old country might that be? They're all Greek to me. Right together with those shrinking detonations. Cause you can't even form a federation. From the Bosphorus to the Irish Sea. Once again they cry out desperately. Come and help us, Germany. You're all Greek to me. All the richer nations are feeling burned, cause they can't retire on what the Grecians earn. Now you try to shrink your way out of your debt. Really hope it works, but it sure hasn't yet. It's a problem that you still haven't got beyond, because you haven't got the will to float a European bond. That's why America is still the best, because we can always pull together and pull together. And you're all Greek to me. You're all Greek to me. You're all Greek to me.
And both songs this week get rounds of applause. I wonder if David Njoya is some type of PhD candidate in economics. This guy knows what he's talking about. Hey, study this song just to learn what's going on. All right, folks, we're going to head to the better half of the program. And that's not deriding at all the first half of the program. It's just saying the better half is that much is even better. So if the first half of the program is great, the better half of the program is like uber alles. And you can be a part of our growing army to enjoy the uber alles section by becoming a member at Majority FM. Really need your help and your support, folks. We've got a lot of ideas that we'd like to implement, including doing this forever. Please, if you can become a member, please do. Of course, there's other ways you can support the show. Buy your crap that you buy from Amazon. Buy it through our link. We get a kickback. Do you drink coffee? Do you grind your own beans at home? Do you not grind your beans? Do you drink it at home? Do you drink tea at home? Do you eat chocolate? Why are you not going to justcoffee.coop and using your coupon code MAJORITY? Think about it. You save 10%, support a great company, support a great show. You can also go to donateyouraccount.com/MAJORITYFM. Donate your Facebook account, folks. Oh, members today will get that extra Bobby Kennedy interview, like another 20 minutes of the Bobby Kennedy interview, maybe more, 25 minutes. And on Monday, we'll give you an opportunity. If you donate your account, your Facebook account, if you give us a recommendation on iTunes, we'll send it to you. Just tweet Matt at Majority FM. What else am I forgetting? Nothing. See you in the better half. You can IM me. Call me at 646-257-3920. We'll be right back after this. Plenty more stories to talk about. See, fun stories. Fun stories of the horrors that could be awaiting us in the future. See you then.